that. But I have a cold, so my throat is all screwed up. So if I start, if you ask me a question and I start hacking at you or make an odd throat noise, don't be offended. It's just the cold acting up. So I'm going to talk to you about Higgs effective field theories for LHC. And first I'm going to tell you what I mean by that and just give you a very quick reason as to why I think it's important. So what I mean by it is a bunch of constructions, which you'll see, which are trying to, in as model-independent as way as possible, figure out how new physics can affect the properties of the Higgs. So I'm assuming that Higgs is going to be discovered at LHC, and that new physics will be hard to come by, because history recently indicates it's hard to come by. And so we're going to look in the properties of Higgs as much as we can to try and find evidence of new physics. So I'm going to talk about really work from two of these three papers here. The first paper, where with Ben Grinstein, we looked at how new physics can affect the Higgs self-couplings. So we constructed this general sort of Higgs effective theory formalism. We constructed a non-relativistic limit of that formalism, and we did that in order to look at the interesting possibility of a two Higgs bound state at LHC, which is what is called Higgsian here. And then I'll skip over the second paper. I scraped it out last night because I just figured I wouldn't have enough time. But let me just tell you that what we did in that paper, it forms part of the logical flow here, is we looked at naturalness and the Yukawa couplings, and we did very extensive study of both naturalness considerations and experimental considerations, like anomalous magnetic moments, and basically looked at whether you can really honestly say that you can have a large shift in a Yukawa coupling due to new physics. The answer is yes. So, but I'm not going to talk about that. But then that formed the inspiration of the third paper, which we're going to look at how a particular Yukawa coupling can change, H to BB. And if that happens, the Higgs width can be affected dramatically. And I'll talk about this sinister scalar doublet scenario. And that's a scenario where what causes this higher dimensional operators, which change the H to BB coupling, is another scalar doublet. And it's sinister because it can make the Higgs disappear at LHC. And you also don't find any evidence for this new doublet. So it's kind of a nightmare scenario. You see nothing. So that's a paper with Mark Wise and Sonny Mantri. And I'll talk more at the end of the talk about that. When I say not seen, I mean not. That's always a data-dependent statement. So I mean not seen in the first 100 inverse femtomarins of data. But of course, if you collect data for however many years, because they're willing to fund you while you see nothing, eventually it will be seen at about 500 inverse femtomarins of data is what the experimentalists tell us they need to distinguish it from the background. So yeah, when I say not seen, I mean not seen for a while. So just a little Higgs primer, because of the broad nature of the audience. The standard model of particle physics, it describes spontaneously broken gauge theory, SE3 plus SE2 cross U1, breaking down to SE3 cross U1. And how electric symmetry is broken, you've heard about in a couple of the talks, is the interesting central question that LHC should answer. The standard model has a very simple, so this whole slide is kind of to motivate you why I think the Higgs is going to be there. And then I'll talk about why it has problems that need more new physics. So just keep beautiful, simple, elegant in mind for this slide. The Higgs is really a gorgeous solution. It really does the job very well. So in the standard model, of course, you have this unseen doublet, the Higgs doublet. It has the potential given there with 0.2. And so it has a vacuum expectation value. And when it takes on that vacuum expectation value, you can use gauge symmetry to rotate the vacuum expectation value to have that form. And when it takes on that vacuum expectation value, the kinetic sector terms you write down, they give you three massive bosons, the W plus, W minus, the Z, and one massless photon. We see all that in our low energy particle content. And the Yukawa sector of the standard model, when the Higgs takes on this vacuum expectation value, gives you the masses for the quarks and leptons. So we see massive quarks and leptons. We see a massless photon. And all the indirect tests we've done so far for the Higgs indicate it's there and it's consistent with data. And it really, it's really beautiful, simple, and elegant. And it really is likely that it will be part of the answer for electric symmetry breaking, in my estimation, and that's what's assumed in this talk. So it is beautiful, simple, and elegant, and it's probably part of the right answer. But it does have problems. So looking closer, we have some problems, and that's why I think there's going to be new physics, and that's why I'm motivating why we're looking for new physics and the Higgs properties. So one thing is just kind of sociological. It's experimentally elusive. We've been looking for it for a long time. Like, I put 20 years here, but really we've been looking for it for even longer than that. And where the heck is it? Well, we haven't seen it yet. And it's a little disturbing that if you look at papers throughout the 80s and 90s, you'll see that people are always saying that the Higgs is just around the energy corner. Like, the next experiment's always going to find it. So the fact that I'm telling you now the next experiment's going to find it, you may not believe me. But nonetheless, there are good reasons to expect that it's just around the energy corner now. I'll give you them. We looked directly for it at LAP 2, and we didn't see it. And so that's where this exclusion bound of it being at least 114.4 GeV comes from. So now that's an exclusion bound of 114.4 GeV because a bunch of wackiness happened around 115 GeV. And what actually happened, and there's some leftover sociology of that, is why we think the Higgs is soon to be found, was they found like a couple of events that right at the end of their run. But they made a very bold decision to turn off the experiment. But subsequent reanalysis of the data, I think there was five events distributed amongst the experiments, although that number might be slightly off. The idea is that there was just a couple of events, but reanalysis of that has found that most of those events went away. So there's no statistical evidence for the Higgs really at all. So that the exclusion bound comes basically because of that. Now there is this indirect evidence. The electric precision data tells us that. So what happens there is you basically calculate a bunch of observables to do with the Z that they measured at LAP 2. And through the way the Higgs couples to the gauge bosons and then through loop corrections, basically your predictions depend on the Higgs. You measure these things in experiment, and then you extract the Higgs mass indirectly through its quantum effects. And that tells you that the Higgs is 84 GeV central value plus 33 minus 24. And there's a little bit of tension between these two, the exclusion bound and then the central value, but it's a one sigma thing, so let's not worry about it. So this is the indirect evidence which makes us think the Higgs is soon to be found. This indirect evidence for the Higgs. But of course you can also fit this electric precision data with theories with no Higgs. And you can in fact fit it when you take the standard model and make the Higgs very massive, integrate it out of the theory and have the Carle electroweak Lagrangian. And you can just fit the data fine. You get Wilson coefficients, which are not unusual or unexpected. So the fact that you can fit the data and find a Higgs, and people say this is the reason the Higgs is going to be found, well, you should be a little skeptical maybe, because you can also fit the same data without a Higgs. So maybe it's not the strongest evidence, but nonetheless, we're still going to assume the Higgs is going to be found because it is such a simple, beautiful, elegant solution. This will give you an idea of how simple, elegant, and beautiful it is that these issues don't really bother the majority of people. Now, there's other problems. We talked about this yesterday. It's unstable against radiative correction. It's a hierarchy problem. So you just do calculate this loop. It's quadratically divergent. If you believe the standard model with the Higgs is correct all the way up to a very high scale, then this cutoff you're putting on this loop would be some sort of gut scale, perhaps. It would be a very large number. Then you receive huge corrections to the Higgs mass, and so you need a large cancellation between the bare value and then these corrections for you to get a low-energy Higgs found soon at experiment. One way to interpret this, although there are other reasons, other ways to interpret this, is that this indicates that there is new physics at a scale that isn't too high, say about a TeV, and then these sort of Higgs mass shifts will not be anything to worry about. And that's the assumption we're going to take in this talk. There are many other viewpoints, but that's the assumption that is underlying this work. There's also this issue of the triviality problem, which basically is if you just take the standard model of the Higgs and you drive it up, you run through the RGE evolution, you can show that the coupling vanishes and therefore the Higgs vanishes through this relationship, the mass of the Higgs vanishes through this relationship. So there's another reason that's actually logically distinct from the hierarchy problem as to why you think there has to be a cutoff and a cutoff not too high. So all of these reasons in blue here make us think that there's going to be a Higgs, and for this talk we're going to be talking about the situation where the new physics scale is not too high. It's at the mass scale of about a TeV. Now, that immediately should raise a red flag because there's flavor-changing neutral current constraints on having low scale and new physics. So in this talk, we're focusing on operators that do not cause large flavor-changing neutral currents, and we're going to use minimal flavor violation where appropriate. Minimal flavor violation, for the purposes of this talk, just tells you that the same reason flavor-changing neutral currents are small in the standard model, you also have that exact same symmetry structure detain that same suppression for new physics extensions.
What puzzle does it reply?
That's a very hard question to answer because it's not actually formally established that the standard model has a triviality problem. People study in lattice simulations analogous models, and it's believed the extrapolation of the standard model indicates triviality is still an issue there. So the answer to your question is, it's something I don't know the exact number or answer to, but that's the reason why. So it's not actually formally established that the standard model has this problem, but it's widely believed to be the case. It's a harder problem to, it's hard to actually get there. But if you have a low scale.
It's still a bit unusual because I would naively expect that what the problem would be for every level.
Yeah, well, I'm not an expert on triviality, but the lattice people that study these sort of things tell me they believe this is a problem. All right, so let me move on a little quicker because I'm running out of time. So even though LHC has the 14 TeV center mass energy, it does not mean that you're going to find all new physics up to 14 TeV. And I'm going to show you an explicit example of that at the end of the talk. So I'm constructing a low energy effective field theory to look at how the properties of the Higgs is affected by new physics. So we write down dimension 5 and dimension 6 operators. And first, for the effect on the self-coupling of the Higgs, we're going to look at operators that are not constrained by precision electric data involving the Higgs and derivatives. They're actually going to preserve custodial symmetry, so they're not going to affect the rho parameter. And if you want to have something in mind, although we're trying to be as model-independent as possible, you can think of some strong physics of some format of TeV involved in electric symmetry breaking, setting the scale, the electric symmetry breaking scales, that would be a good thing. The Higgs is in some sense, well, not some sense, it's a Goldstone boson of a broken symmetry in that sector. And it's going to get mass through the standard model corrections. So standard model interactions will give it a mass. So it's not exactly massless. But that would be a reason that the Higgs mass is low as opposed to at a TeV. And we're going to take the Wilson coefficients of the operators to be about 1. So we're going to look at these three operators here that really affect the Higgs self-coupling. So there's going to be a C phi 1, Wilson coefficient C phi 2, and then a lambda 2. So there's going to be three operators. Let's see what they do. Okay, so we're integrating out new physics because it's hard to come by at a TeV. We're getting these three operators, and then we're going to run down using RG evolution, although we're actually not going to do any explicit running. So use the unitary gauge to expand the Higgs, this phi field, which is the Higgs doublet, sorry, I changed from H to phi, and expand it in terms of this little h around this vacuum expectation value. This will give us non-canonically normalized Lagrangian. These other C phi 1, C phi 2 give us kinetic sector terms which are non-canonical. It's easy to deal with. We use the field redefinition here. We introduce this CHK, which just think of, it has a C phi 1 and C phi 2 hidden in there. It's small. It's V squared over M squared suppressed, where M is the scale of new physics, V is the electroweak scale. And we're going to expand in V over M squared. And that's actually small enough to expand in. It's like 1 over 16 for M about a TeV. And it's small enough to expand in, but it's not so small that you won't be able to see anything. And we're going to reflect the effect of running, as I told you. And we're only looking at phenomenology for the first part of this talk, where it's appropriate to integrate out the top part. Yep. No, it's custodial symmetry. No, but it's custodial symmetry, which you worked it out. So we're integrating the top quark, and this is okay for the phenomenology we're going to do. Although there are times we can't integrate the top quark, we can do it here, if I can justify that in more detail. So we get this induced effective potential doing this and expanding out those operators, as well as the usual center model Lagrangian. And the Higgs masses and couplings are now given here. So the CHK has appeared. Remember, it had to do with the kinetic sector stuff. We rescaled the field, so it's now appeared in the masses and in the cubic and quartic couplings. There's this lambda 2 dependence. So the idea is in the standard model, if you knew the mass of the Higgs, the CHK with no new physics would be 0, and lambda 2 would be 0. And so if you knew MH, you'd know lambda 1. And this top quark dependent term here, this M T to the fourth or V to the fourth term is just due to integrating out the top quark. So, but if you knew the Higgs mass, you would know lambda 1. If you knew lambda 1, you would know the cubic and quartic self-coupling. And now that you have new physics, the relationship, once you know the Higgs mass between the Higgs mass and the self-couplings, is starting to break down a little bit. So let's see how much we can push that. Let's see what can happen. So get an idea of how big the shifts can be in these cubic and quartic self-couplings. You just put these numbers in for the Higgs mass. That's about 120 GeV Higgs. And look at what happens. You get this cubic and quartic self-coupling where you have this interesting behavior where if lambda 4, which is, you know, you have two Higgses going in, they annihilate and form two other Higgses. If that is, if you have lambda 2 order 1 and negative, then that interaction basically is going to be highly suppressed. And that actually is a repulsive, at least a repulsive force between two Higgses in the standard model. Whereas if you had lambda 2 order 1 and negative, this cubic term, which leads to the Yukawa attractive force between two Higgses, would not be suppressed. So it could, you know, you could have a situation where the Yukawa force would be even perhaps a little higher than it is in the standard model, and yet the quartic repulsive force is much smaller than it is in the standard model. So maybe something interesting can happen with two Higgses. So first, before we look at the interesting part, let's talk about just this generic simple thing. So if you wanted to find that the cubic self-coupling was deviating from a standard model value, how would you know at LHC? So you would want to test for lambda 3. So you test two Higgs production. So this little dot here, I'm just being pedagogic in this talk as much as possible. This little dot here is when, remember, I've integrated with the top quark. So there's two gluons coming in. It's forming this triangle of top quarks, and it's emitting a Higgs. And I've integrated that out, and it's now a little local operator, which is that black dot. So you have two gluons coming in producing one Higgs. It splits into two other Higgs. That's where the cubic coupling dependence comes in. And then you have two gluons coming in, and you integrated a box, and you have two Higgses spitted off. But again, we're shrinking that down to a black dot. It's a local operator. We've integrated with the top quark. And the interference of these two diagrams is what tells you what the rate of two Higgs production is at LHC in the standard model. Okay, so this has been studied in the standard model, and for MH less than 200 GeV, the cross section falls from about 50 to 10 femtoburns. This leads to about 1,000 events and 100 Mertz femtoburns of data. Okay. Now the interesting thing is this small amount of events, which this is a very marginal thing. This is very hard to see. Probably we can't see it at LHC. Maybe they do a really dedicated study, but it's very hard to see. But it's small really because there's a large degree of cancellation between those diagrams. So if the cubic self-coupling is deviating from the standard model value, that cancellation will be screwed up. And so you could, depending on the Wilson coefficients, get a lot more two Higgs events. Now we're going to assume that happens, and this will be very exciting. But unfortunately, it's not enough to figure out exactly what's going on. You just have two Higgs events different from the standard model. You have, say, 2,000, 4,000 events. It can just depend on your Wilson coefficients, you know, the new physics Wilson coefficients. It's very exciting, but it's not enough. There's too many parameters to figure out what's going on. So we need more information to do with the Higgs self-interactions to figure out what's going on. So in the pursuit of more information, we've looked at this possibility of two Higgs bound states. Right, so in the standard model, a two Higgs bound state can form. It was studied by Kahn and Suzuki numerically, and they basically their conclusion was it can form, but it would require a very large Higgs mass. So the question we're going to try and formulate a theoretical formalism to answer is, how high does the mass have to be in this new physics, standard model plus new physics context for a Higgs bound state, two Higgs bound state to form? Now, bound states in field theory is kind of a topic that's neglected. You can see Beda's papers, like Sturman's book actually has a little bit on it. I think Peskin just says something along the lines of, it's an interesting topic and I'm not going to talk about it because it's hard. So basically the idea is you want to describe the Green's, you want to get the Green's function that describes the bound state. So you diagrammatically here you want to have the Green's function which is equal to its tree level approximation, and then the Green's function convoluted with the interaction potential. So mathematically it's given by this expression here. You want this Green's function h. K is the center of mass, energy, momentum, and little k, remember for the rest of the talk, is going to be the relative energy momentum of the two Higgs. So you get this tree level approximation, and then you have the convolution of the interaction potential with that Green's function. So if I knew the Green's function, I could probably do these integrals, and I would get back the Green's function. Everything would be great. But I don't know the Green's function, so I can't do the integrals, so I'm screwed. So it's a very hard problem to solve just analytically. You can solve the massless case where the exchange particle isn't the same particle as the exterior particles, and you know, the statistical issues, it's a very hard problem to solve. You can look in the literature, you look up the Witkacoski model and putting a mass into the Witkacoski model. It's an unsolved problem in field theory for 50 years. I couldn't do it either, but you can figure out a kind of interesting way to get around the problem to figure out what we want, which is basically what sort of mass could form bound states. We want to solve that. So we figured an approximation to this V by taking the non-relativistic limit that allows us to solve that, that allows us to answer that question. So that's why we're doing this non-relativistic approximation. So we constructed this NRHET in this paper with Ben. So we're taking the C goes to infinity limit formally of the Higgs Lagrange density. So we have this H again, which is a singlet field. I've gone back to the case where the field hasn't been rescaled, so the kinetic sector terms here that we rescaled into the other parameters are now back. We're just writing down the general Lagrangian to do the next couple steps. And I want to take the C goes to infinity limit, and I also want to remove the large energy scale MHC squared from the Higgs field itself. So I re-express the Higgs field in terms of its creation and annihilation operators, and I pull out this large phase. So the idea is you put the C's explicitly in, you keep H bar equal to 1, you put the C's explicitly in the Lagrange density, and then you, of course, write the Higgs field out through its creation and annihilation operators, pulling out this phase, substitute that into the Lagrangian, and expand, and drop things subleading in C. That's how you do the non-relativistic limit formally. So you can physically understand what's going to happen in that you have two. So what effective field theories describe are on-shell particles, right? Particles that can basically propagate over longer distances. So if I have two on-shell approximately Higgses, and they go along and they annihilate, form a third Higgs, these guys are on-shell, then the energy momentum of this guy has to be further off-shell than these two guys. So the cubic interactions have to vanish, simply because of that sort of physical intuition. And you can think of this mathematically as when you do the analysis, you'll find that you'll always get an exponential with this large phase, MHC squared, remember C goes to infinity. So you get this large phase in terms of the cubic terms that won't vanish, so they'll give vanishing contribution to the action, and they will be neglected. So that's the physical reason, and the math all works out. You get a non-relativistic theory, you get a non-relativistic propagator as usual, and you get a quartic term, which has two Higgs annihilation operators, two Higgs creation operators. That's like two Higgses coming in, annihilating, forming two Higgses, right? But this CNR is unknown. So in effective theory, you write down something consistent with the symmetries like this. You take some limit, and then you need to determine this unknown Mohsen coefficient. We're going to determine that. Yep.
Basic question. If you have a possibility for two neutral Higgses to sort of diffuse into one resonance, would you expect the same for the longitudinal parts of W and Z? Because in principle, you know, those are also going to interact strongly, and those are charged also.
No, wait a minute. So I'm eliminating that from this theory. This non-relativistic limit does eliminate that in the theory. Are you asking a more general question, not related?
Well, more general question. Well, you just introduced a lot of new interaction in the heat section, right?
I can partially answer your crazy question with possibly a crazy answer, which is that in this context, of course, maybe this answers your question. The WW scattering cross section issue is not exactly solved, right? I mean, things still grow in this context, and it is only when you get to the full sector with which has, you know, things integrated out and do things operators where things actually get unitarized and everything gets well behaved. Is that answering what you're asking?
Well, it's just the general expectation that if you have bound state out of the gates, some kind of a resonance, you would also expect
WW
bound state. It's not unreasonable. Maybe those would be easier produced.
Yeah, I mean, it would be, you'd have to describe the interactions dictating the formation and decay time of the WW as opposed to the Higgs. I mean, so we've checked that the formation and decay time are such that the two Higgs bound state can form, but the energetics of how the W's are going to decay as opposed to how the Higgs's are going to decay are going to be different. So I haven't looked at it, but if I was to look at that, I'd have to check to make sure that the formation decay time is such that you could actually form W bound states. So it's not... To me, it's not a priori obvious that if you have a Higgs bound state form, two Higgs bound state form, not two W bound state, because they have different decay products, which, you know, the formation time has to be such that, you know, it's much less than the decay time for it to actually form. So I'd have to check that out first. That's the best answer I can give. All right. Let me go back just to remind you, because we had a little version. So we write down this Lagrangian. We took the C goes to infinity limit, and we write down this Lagrangian. So we have this thing here, and we want to match this onto the theory that we just had before. So how do we do that? Well, you take two Higgs scattering, HH to HH scattering. There's momentum dependence in these diagrams. So you plug in your momentum dependence where things are having the non-relativistic scaling you're interested in. You want to construct the right physical theory for that. So you give this the momenta MHV plus this residual momentum P is what you always do in effective theories. piece has a scaling of k squared for the energy and then k for the momentum part. And all you do is you just take this diagram, you plug that momentum dependence in, and you expand in k. That's how you do the matching. And you obtain this Wilson coefficient here for the normal relativistic theory. So it depends on lambda 1, which was the cubic self, it's just the self-coupling of the Higgs and standard model. It depends on lambda 2 and all those new physics effects, and it depends on the fact of the integrator of the top quark. Now, I told you that the quartic coupling in the standard model was repulsive, and something we're interested in was the fact that, you know, you could set that repulsive force very to make it go away, basically, what happened. The cubic Yukawa force, the attractive force, not being set to zero. This quartic interaction is actually attractive. So it can form a bound state. And if you and it actually gives you just a delta function for that interaction potential in the Dyson-Schwinger equation I talked to you about. So you can solve the problem now. And if you do solve the problem, you can show that the H, that Green's function, is given by this sum of diagrams here, where you have this this one bubble, then two bubble, and so on and so forth. It's all based on something Weinberg did in the early 90s for nucleon-nucleon theory. You can calculate these bubbles. They're easy. It just gives you this answer. And one bubble, when you do the calculation, doesn't affect the other bubbles. So you can just take the geometric sum of these things. And I can do geometric sums. So I just take that, and I sum it up, and I get this result here. And that's what your Green's function is. You can, if you think about this series of diagrams, and you think about that self-consistent solutions for consistency position for the Dyson-Schwinger equation, you can kind of see that it's going to work. So this describes, this expression here describes that H I wanted to find in the normal relativistic limit, describing the bound state. And when the denominator vanishes, that energy at which that happens is interpreted as the bound state energy. So that energy is given here. It depends on the Wilson coefficient I just matched to in the last slide. And it has, you know, mh and 16 pi squareds. Okay, but there's a consistency condition. Remember, I'm taking the c goes to infinity limit. I remove that mhc squared. I forgot the c squareds there. But I remove that scale from the theory, so I still want this bound state energy to be less than that scale I've removed, consistency. So that gives you a constraint on c and r from the last equation, the bound state energy I determined, and then this consistency condition. So if you plot that consistency condition, which I have done in this diagram here, everything above this line can form normal relativistic bound states. It's possible. Lambda 2 and C phi 2 and C phi 1 are the new physics parameters. And then for a Higgs mass of 350 GeV and scale of new physics of 1 TeV, it's possible. Unlikely, probably, but it's possible. It's exciting. Maybe it will happen. So if 2 Higgs production is off from the standard model, that, you know, if you find a Higgs and 2 Higgs production is off from the standard model, you know where to look, right around twice the mass of the Higgs for bound state. So I think it will be worth looking if 2 Higgs production is off, just to try and see if we can see these things. But now the beauty of effective field theory is when you go through all this work to construct and answer this question, you build the theoretical technology to answer this question, you can then answer other questions. So what if I was to write down this theory for electric symmetry breaking? So it's very much a low effective field theory approach. You just write down everything consistent with the symmetries of the theory. So I have a Higgs singlet H, but I have these U fields, so the Goldstone bosons are going to appear through these U matrix fields. It's called a nonlinear realization of electric symmetry breaking. And again, you can think of some strong interaction props at a TV or 2TV that preserves custodial symmetry. And the potential of the theory is given this with this generic form here. So now the singlet field is going to be a Goldstone of that sector. And so it'll have a small mass for that reason. But look at what happens with the cubic coupling. So the cubic coupling, if you just write down this general Lagrangian, and you look at the cubic coupling for this general potential here, the cubic coupling is going to be given by M over V. And then something which has no reason to be small, even though this is small, there's no reason for this derivative to be small or this derivative to be small. So this is kind of a theory where naturally the cubic interaction of the Higgs, the singlet field H, would be much larger than it is in the standard model. Because M over V is much greater than 1. Okay, so we write down again the Higgs-Lagrange Lagrangian we wrote down before. We take the normal relativistic limit. We can use the technology to do the matching. And all you get is a different Wilson coefficient given here. And the bound state condition you determine in the exact same way given by this expression. Now, I should go back and just tell you that the only things that are really important are this C1 effective term, because this is dimension 5. And then there's this relevant operator, which is given by this lambda 3 is given by M over V, then something order 1. So this guy and this guy are really the only important contributions to determine whether or not the bound state will form, because they're the strongest parts of the self-interaction. Okay, so you take out the scales there for that lambda 3 effect and that C1 effect that I just talked about, and you can plot the bound state formation possibilities. So everything outside these lines can form bound states. So you take MH to be 120 GeV, and as M goes up, in fact, the region of bound state formation, because that lambda 3 is a relevant operator, actually increases. And for 1 TeV scale of new physics, and then MH going up, you find that the region increases and decreases for bound state formation. So it's, again, it's possible bound states can form in this theory as well. Okay, so let me move on to the second part of my talk. If I have some time to finish, I'll go quickly through it. How much time do I have left?
10 minutes.
Okay, that's about right. Okay, so this, oh yeah, question?
Something that you mentioned to my team.
Yeah, I have a question.
So you have checked that the width of this resonance bound state is, whatever, it must be much smaller than.
Yeah, we checked that. It works out. So you just do dimensional analysis, basically dictated by that k and the relative velocity of the two eddies, and that dictates basically the formation time. And then you just look at the dominant k product, so H to BB or H to WW, and you just work out the scales,
you can
and
do
it works
just
out.
In your effective fields.
Well, it's just really just dimensional analysis. So, yeah. It works. It's possible. And we checked that. Of course, all of that does is that dictates the velocity, a typical velocity. And if we've shown that, we've looked at that, and those are still not relativistic velocity, so it's a self-consistent picture. Okay, so let me talk about something which has like a scary font, sinister scalar doublet scenario. So this is very much logically distinct from what I talked about before. All this is a different way that you physics can show up in Higgs properties. So forget it, well, not forget everything, but just put what I just talked about, all that stuff before, to the side. It's a totally different sort of thing, although it's still new physics spectrum properties and things. So the width of the light Higgs is dictated by small eukaryotes, which are actually sensitive to new physics. So the second thing proves that I'm going to talk about. So if the Higgs is, say, 140 GeV or less, the branching ratios of the Higgs are given here versus the Higgs mass. So about 140 GeV is, there-ish. So if you look, the branching ratio is of course, right, decay into BB over the total number of decays. So almost all the Higgs decay into BB. That's what this tells you. Then they decay into tau taus. So this is about 80% of the time the Higgs will decay into BB, and about 4% of the time it decays into taus and CCs, and then there's GG and other things. But the point is that the width of the Higgs, which dictates the total decay, right, is dictated by these small eukaryotes, which are sensitive to new physics. So I'm going to show you how eukaryotes can get changed by new physics and can screw up and increase the H to BB decay, whereas the way we discover the Higgs isn't through these dominant decay modes. We use things like two photons. So this guy here, this is what we use. This is what we are going to use at LHC to find the Higgs. This guy, which is highly suppressed. So if you make the total width change, these highly suppressed signals in the first place could become much smaller. They're already small, but they could become even smaller. And then the Higgs wouldn't show up for much more data at LHC. That would be bad. That's why it's sinister. Okay, so let me show you how this works. So we're going to change H to BB by a factor F, and everything else is going to remain the same. And that's going to screw up things like H to gamma gamma, which we want to use to find the Higgs, and H to tau tau. So if we change H to BB by F, and everything else remains the same, then other signals shift by this factor Xe here. And, for what F is, you can show that Xe could easily be 3 or 1 over 80. And if it's 3, it's great, because that's an early Higgs discovery, right? It's much earlier Higgs discovery. If it's 1 over 80, that's a disaster, because that's a lot more data to find the Higgs. So I'll talk about the model. And so just remember, this is one way this can happen. If you don't like this way, you can think of other ways probably that this can happen. And you should just note that this was just shown to be consistent last week by Lise Randall. This is totally consistent with large tan beta, supersymmetry scenario. So this could be maybe a sort of signal of supersymmetry. OK, so we write down a general potential. So we have two doublets now. This is the idea. We have two doublets. We're going to integrate with the second doublet. We're going to show how that's going to change the H to BB eukaryote coupling. So we have the original Higgs doublet phi. We have this new doublet S. And M is about a TeV for S. So we write down this general potential. Notice G1 shows up in the interactions of the potential. Okay, so we write down phi so that it has usual electric symmetry breaking. But then the second doublet, S, does not have usual electric symmetry breaking. It only gets a vacuum expectation value through the potential. It's induced by vacuum expectation value phi gets. So S gets this induced vacuum expectation value, which is suppressed by V squared over M squared. And it has this G1 dependence. And that's small. And the vacuum excitation value basically dictates how this S doublet is going to decay into W's and Z's. So as it's small, the W and Z's, which are easy to see at LHC, are going to be hard. It's going to be hard for it to decay into useful modes. So you can write down the U-Kawas of the new doublet. And we're using minimal flavor violations. So when we write down these terms, which are just like standard model terms, except that we have S instead of phi, we have a proportionality to U-Kawa matrix, just like in the standard model. That's why the flavor changing neutral currents go away. But even though you have the same U-Kawa matrix, it's proportional to that U-Kawa matrix, the absolute value of the proportionality is unknown. And so that's why this ND parameter appears. Now, because the S and the Higgs, usual Higgs phi, are both giving mass to the quarks and leptons, you're going to get down quark masses, which are related to the usual masses, just coming from the usual Higgs in this way. It's not really important, but they're shifted a little bit. So we're interested in when H to BB changes due to integrating out S. And that's going to give us the parameter space where ND is much, much greater than 1. But that's OK, because nothing's non-perturbative here. It's still ND times U-Kawa, and U-Kawa is 10 to the minus 2. So even if this is like 5, it's still very small. Everything's perturbative. OK, so we're interested in the parameter space where ND is greater than 1, where NU is less than 1. And that's totally natural in large 10 beta supersymmetry. So we've checked that the flavor-changing neutral current, beta S gamma constraint, which is the strongest constraint we could think of for this model, is that everything's fine. So we did these diagrams where the S is exchanged and it causes beta S gamma. So then you find this effective Hamiltonian. If you just work out all the loops and do everything right, you find this effective Hamiltonian. And this will give you that the beta S gamma in this model with this new scalar doublet compared to beta S gamma in the standard model. It goes as 1 plus this very small parameter. And it's the chirality of this effective Hamiltonian that it only appears when it's squared. That's the reason it only appears when it's squared. So it's a very small thing. I mean, we looked at the data for beta S gamma, and it's, the model is totally viable. There's no reason to think that this is this problem. So now we're going to integrate out this new doublet S. And when we do that, we get this operator, which has 3 Higgs fields, so the 3 phis. And this is just like the U-Kawa operator, except that it's coming from integrating out S. It's a higher dimension operator, so it's suppressed by an M squared. And this guy can totally change what the H to BB U-Kawa coupling is. Okay, so it changes the decays H to BB compared to H to BB in the standard model by this expression here. Now, the G1 member would appear from the potential, and this ND had to do with the proportionality for the U-Kawa for the new scalar doublet. We're keeping ND times V squared over M squares, because that's not necessarily that small, but we're neglecting ND times E to the fourth over M to the fourth, which is consistent. So H to BB can change quite a bit. And we can't see H to BB. This is the problem, right? LHC, we're just going to assume that H to BB is what it is in the standard model, and we're not going to see it for many hundred imperfect parts of data. And can we see S? Well, no. We calculated the dominant production for the neutral component of that scalar doublet S. Comes through gluon splitting, so you have 2 gluons coming along. They both do collinear gluon splitting into B quarks, and so there's log enhancements. And then 2 of those B quarks annihilate into the S, and we've checked that gives that gives you the dominant production of this S. And then there's also the case where you have 2 gluons, you have collinear gluon splitting into Bs, that those Bs then fuse and then form a usual Higgs, and then that Higgs mixes into the S field because it has the same quantum numbers it can mix. So that's these 2 dominant production mechanisms. These are even less than 100 or 1,000 events for 100 inverse Fenton Barnes of data. So it's even worse than the 2 Higgs signal I told you about. So we can't see this. And it just gets worse. I'll even show you it just gets worse. So not that many of these neutral S's are produced. Well, OK, what about the charged S's? Can we see those? No, we can't see those. They're even more suppressed. They don't have this is the dominant production mechanism. They're even more suppressed in production. The pseudoscalar production isn't suppressed, but it's harder to see because it doesn't have the dominant decay mode. Right, so as I said, the Higgs and this S has the same quantum numbers, so they mix. And that's why one of the production mechanisms for the S is the 2 gluons coming along and it's splitting into B quarks fusing, producing the Higgs, which then mixes into the S. So we can express the Higgs and the S and this mixing by that expression there. And the mass spectrum of the theory is easy to write down from the potential. So if you look at the region of parameter space, just to give you an example here, where the one we just looked at, the production of the neutral scalar, new scalar, that mass is lower than the masses of the pseudoscalar and the charged guys. If we look at the branching ratios for this guy, which is hard to produce, it's even worse. It's hard to produce, and it only decays into things we can't see. So it almost always decays into H to BB by construction. We're looking at the parameter space region where that's the case. It can also decay into two H's, but you know, two H's are hard to see at LHC as well. I'll show you why. And remember, it had this S had a small VEV, so basically that dictates that it decays into Z's and W's. It's highly suppressed. This thing is almost impossible to see. So here's some realistic final states. Experimentalists tell us these are the best final states that you can use to find this stuff. So we look at, you know, leptons in the final state are good. They can trigger on those, jet production. So these are a bunch of final states. And those are the number of events for 100 inverse femtomeres of data. That's a heck of a lot of data at LHC. And those are different parameter choices. The first two columns are just different combinations of G1 and ND that give the same XC. So you can see that the decay, the number of final states changes slightly, even though the other signals like H to gamma gamma is shifted by the same amount. The last column is the missing Higgs, the really sinister scenario, where XC is like 1 over 80. So the Higgs is really missing at LHC for a lot of data. And you can see that's actually the situation where it's most hopeful to find this new guy. But it's still pretty bad. 160 events, say, you know, 1,000 events in this best case scenario for the jets in this final entry here. But you then have to do selection cuts for removing other backgrounds. So you're going to remove a lot of these events even more. This is really almost impossible to see. Although it's the best, so it's kind of somewhat hopeful. If the Higgs goes missing, if in this sort of situation, if this is the reason the Higgs goes missing, you know, it's the most hopeful scenario, generally, that you could find this guy. But it still would be a lot. It would be very difficult to see experimentally. So that's why it's a sinister scalar doublet. We can see nothing. That would be bad. OK, so let me just conclude. So effective field theory techniques, like I've showed you, they allow you to construct a general independent model-independent operator analysis. But of course, once you do that, that leads you then to interesting models like the sinister scalar doublet scenario, where you can easily think of the situation that can cause those operators. And so it sort of allows you to do something model independent, but then leads you to interesting models as well. And new physics can strongly affect the Higgs self-couplings, maybe forming a bound state. If two Higgs production is off of the standard model, we should really look around twice the mass of the Higgs to look for bound states. You can change the self-couplings, as I said. It can change the Higgs fermion couplings, as I talked about the H to BB changing. Other Higgs fermion couplings can change as well. So one thing we want to test at LHC is, just talked about in the second paper but skipped, is we want to test the mechanism of fermion mass generation. So if we find a Higgs, and if it has to do with electric symmetry breaking, it could be that there's another reason that the fermions get their masses. And we want to do that by testing, and actually the best hope for that is H to tau tau. And so the same reason that H to BB can change, H to tau tau can change. I mean, naturalness says it can change a lot too. So you have to be very careful interpreting any sort of tests of Higgs fermion mass generation at LHC for that reason. The Higgs width I showed you can change in the sinister scalar doublet scenario, so it changes all the low mass Higgs observables. It can hide the Higgs. So a lot of stuff can happen. So that's it. Other questions? Yep.
Background signals under this new physics, like other production of BB, does that all change at all?
What will change?
It doesn't change in a useful way, I think.
Well, we haven't done some extensive study on backgrounds, because that's a lot of graduate students of work. But it'll change. But it won't change significantly. I mean, all that will be suppressed by loops, basically, right? So it's going to be suppressed by 16 pi squared, factors of 100. So the things will change, but not that much.
Okay. My other question is sociological, and that is, what if this happens?
Well, I'm not in charge. I say.
What would you do?
Well, I mean, the whole point of these sort of constructions, for this timely point to do these sort of investigations, is to try and figure out and have in people's minds a lot of different possible scenarios to what can show up. So this is a very concrete example. When the Higgs doesn't show up. Now, usually, if the Higgs doesn't show up, people would be very excited initially, right? Because they would think, okay, the Higgs isn't there. Therefore, you know, some other strong physics or something's going to show up. It's going to be really exciting, and it will show up soon. But this is a scenario where the Higgs doesn't show up. It's still there. It just doesn't show up for a long time. And you don't necessarily see the other new resonances of the strong sector for a long time. It can be like 3 TeV or something. So what do you do? Well, you keep this in mind. And you use the large resources and graduate students to refine your searches. That's what you do. I mean, what else can you do? But if you keep this in mind, then you have an idea of how you can refine your searches. This tells you that maybe people should really think hard about maybe trying to reduce that irreducible standard model background so they can see HTTP and less data. So, I mean, it just gives you an idea of where you can allocate your resources to try and figure out what's going on.
Or you are becoming very good at fundraising and you build a linear collider.
Yeah.
You can
well, you know what? I haven't written a paper on the linear collider yet because I figure they spend a lot of money on LHC. So I figure it's my duty, my burden to just write papers about LHC for a couple more years. So I'm not willing to write papers about linear colliders yet. But yeah. So, I mean, part of the formulation, part of the reasoning of this talk and this work is to try and figure out, you know, as creatively as possible, in as many ways as possible, signals at LHC. I mean, 2 weeks, a resonance, such as a bound state, might be hard to find. It's a resonance. You know, you know where to look. It's around twice the mass of the Higgs, so maybe you can find it.
This I don't quite understand. If you know, two Higgs interact very strongly, right?
Yeah.
You would naively expect that it will kind of, the binding energy in some sense is
yeah.
a significant fraction of their mass. So
yeah.
it's not going to be exactly two mass.
No, well, I mean, we figured out an analytic expression for the binding energy in this approximation. So it depends on the Wilson coefficients, yeah. But, I mean, remember these effects are still suppressed by B squared over M squared. So even though they have things like 10 multiplying them, you know, if you work at the numbers, the binding energy isn't that significant. I mean, it shifts, but yeah. So you start looking at twice the mass of the Higgs and go down. That's the search strategy. And look. Any other
questions? If you have a comment, if you have some thing that is likely to know Higgs and interacts with the Higgs,
mm-hmm.
and make the non-states out of the Higgs without pushing it into a strong interaction.
Yeah, because that could give you an exchange particle where the
That's
mass maybe could be neglected. That would be good. And people have studied, I mean, kind of the last couple of years, it's been a flurry of papers on everybody writes down a new singlet and sees what they can do with it. Sure, I mean, you can do that. And that's interesting to do. Singlet extensions are fine.
Well, in the beginning of your talk, I assume that you're going to go about Higgs became invisible.
No, the Higgs is...
That's why I said that it can be seen.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's effectively invisible because, yeah.
There's a difference between...
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Yeah. Any further questions?